Peter B. Collins News and Comment. It's Thursday, May 29, 2014. I've got a lot of respect for General Eric Shinseki, but it's probably time for him to go.
Everybody's gotta go sometime. I'm so far from ready. Ain't gonna mess my mind. Won't keep on rocking steady.
At the Obama White House, they're expressing some support for General Shinseki, but the chorus of voices is building to remove him as the Secretary for Veterans Affairs. And I, as I said, have a high regard for Shinseki. He was one of the few willing to tell the truth in the face of the march to war in Iraq, and he paid quite a price. The Bush administration punished him for saying that, hey, if you're going to occupy Iraq, you're going to need hundreds of thousands of troops. And that wasn't what Rumsfeld wanted to hear. And so, of course, Shinseki was cashiered. And I give credit to Obama for bringing a person like Shinseki with a strong military background to try to tackle the systemic problems at the Department of Veterans Affairs. And I don't take any pleasure in saying this, but at this point, because Democrats in the Senate are now calling for his resignation, that's generally the signal that the White House really can't resist much longer. And that's why there was a kind of qualified endorsement of Shinseki from the White House today. My bottom line is that while it's deeply embarrassing, and I think the president used the term deeply troubling, that what we've seen exposed is illegal activities at the Veterans Administration, mostly aimed at tamping down public relations fires. And as you know, because of the incredible demand on VA services that has expanded since the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan, they're overwhelmed and under budgeted. And no matter who you could find to replace Eric Shinseki, the problems at the VA will not be solved anytime soon. Largely, Congress refuses to give the VA the blank checks that it gives the Pentagon, to give the VA more money than it asks for, like the Pentagon routinely gets. And so the hypocrisy in Washington from many of the same people who want the head of General Shinseki but have not stepped up to support our veterans is, well, it's pretty damn obvious to me. So the Inspector General revealed that there are massive problems, that there have been systems set up to disguise the actual wait times for a veteran to get an appointment, to get qualified for benefits, and to get a treatment program going. And this is something that I think should lead to a massive stand down. I think the VA should employ a military tactic here. And they should stand down for a day, a week, a month, until they can analyze the problems and fix them. And we know, for example, that members of Congress like Barbara Lee and Jackie Speer from here in the Bay Area have been pounding the VA over these backlogs and delays. And it appeared there were some improvements. But those improvements may be based on concocted data, and so we don't actually know. Now, one move that's been made recently is to allow veterans to get health services at hospitals outside the VA system. But, of course, the costs there, despite of the dramatic decrease in costs we're all experiencing, I don't really mean that because of Obamacare. At any rate, this is a national disgrace. And firing General Shinseki is not going to change that. That said, I think that he will be likely tendering his resignation in the next few days. Our friend and colleague Jason Leopold, the FOIA junkie, is back at it. He FOIA'd the NSA about how many FOIA requests they've gotten and how they internally managed the fallout from Ed Snowden's disclosures and the expected rush of Freedom of Information Act requests. So in an article at TheGuardian.com today, and I'll link to it in the show file at PeterBCollins.com, Leopold reports that NSA officials wrestled for weeks on how to respond to the surge in open records requests from members of the public that started last year after the Snowden leaks were revealed in early June. Newly released NSA emails reveal that the top officials discussed how to fend off journalists, advocacy groups, and individuals who flooded the agency with more than 1,000 requests in just a three-week period last June. Since details about the NSA's surveillance activities were no longer a secret thanks to Snowden's disclosures, the agency didn't know how to respond to these requesters because in the past they would just say, we don't have to respond, it's all secret. So the FOIA chief at NSA, a woman named Pamela Phillips, in one email suggested that the agency could buy more time. If a paper or sheet of unclassified facts about the metadata and data mining program PRISM were to be released to requesters. Now, this is just a stalling tactic, and it's interesting to hear it spelled out in this email. Quote, having a paper or sheet of unclassified facts that could be provided to the public may make it easier to respond, because we could provide that with initial responses and then either indicate that all other details are still classified. It may buy more time. For processing. Processing what? Processing FOIA requests? Or processing illegal data grabbed on American citizens? And Leopold continues, ironically, the internal communications the agency turned over to The Guardian are heavily redacted and marked top secret or secret. Now, they did report that since last June, they've had over 5,200 requests for Freedom of Information Act disclosures. We received just 800 requests for the same period a year before. So that is a six-fold increase in those requests. So that FOIA man, Jason Leopold, just never stops, and it is fascinating to see what he can get our government to reveal. Every day I pause to thank the people who support my podcast with their subscription dollars. People like Kevin Beckley, Multitask Man, Marianne Razzo, Carol Krez. They're all subscribers to this podcast, and I'd like you to join them. We distribute it free so that everyone can hear it regardless of your financial means. But if you got a paycheck and money in the bank, and you like what we do here, may I ask you to support it? Because I don't make a living doing this podcast. I barely cover the expenses. And someday I would like to make a living. I'd love to be able to do this full time and nothing else. So please, join up. Come to PeterBCollins.com. Follow the link that says sign up under my picture on the homepage. You get options, $5, $10, $20 a month, whatever's best for your budget. Our best deal is the $50 annual subscription. And for new subscribers in the U.S. to the annual level, I've got bonus gifts including Red Flag, the rock and roll CD from John Dist, and a bag of kick-ass Kona coffee beans grown on the Big Island of Hawaii by our friend Russ Archibald. Well, today I'm releasing to subscribers what I consider to be a really interesting interview with Professor Susanna Danuta Walters of Northeastern University. And as you'll hear at the outset of the interview, her book, The Tolerance Trap, really messed with my mind. And that's the best compliment I can give her. She is a lesbian who is a professor of gender and sexual studies, and she is incredibly an independent thinker, a provocative thinker, and she challenges, for example, the notion that tolerance of gays and lesbians is good enough. She's not that excited about marriage equality because she thinks that it has been too much of the focal point of gay liberation, gay rights efforts in the last few years. And she also takes on the general consensus idea that gays are born that way. When I ask her what does determine sexual orientation, she said she doesn't really know, doesn't really care. But she doesn't automatically embrace the Lady Gaga idea of people being born this way. Here's an excerpt from that powerful interview with Professor Walters.
Of course I support marriage rights. To me, it is the most basic civil, it's a basic civil right. Any person of, you know, who has any belief in equality should, you know, you should support marriage equality. It seems to me a no-brainer. But what disturbs me, I guess, is how this has come to be assumed to be the sign of gay liberation par excellence, or equated with all things gay rights. If you go on to Google and you type in gay rights, what you're going to get is story after story after story about gay marriage. If you talk to anyone about gay rights, what you're going to get are questions, comments, discussions about gay marriage. That's what pundits do. That's what's on the news. That's what's in our newspapers. So that we have got to a situation now in which one single, very simple civil right has come to stand in for the whole panoply of rights and issues and debates that are operative for the gay and lesbian movement. I mean, let's not forget, in this era of gay marriage, you know, mania, we can't even pass ENDA. I mean, the Employment Non-Discrimination Act has been introduced in every Congress since the 90s.
Well, but if you'll permit my interruption, you properly point out in the book that we haven't even passed the Equal Rights Amendment from the 1970s. The full interview with Professor Walters released today to subscribers at peterbcollins.com. Well, have you ever wondered about the composition of the workforce, the employees who work for Google? Well, yesterday, to its credit, Google released a report that gives a breakdown of the ethnic and gender composition of its workforce. Only 2% of Googlers are African American. Only 30% are women. Only 3% are Hispanic. So, it's 61% white people, 30% Asians. And the rest, well, their diversity occurs, you know, within 10% of the population. Now, some people will say that the large percentage of Asians is diverse, and, you know, there is some merit to that. But it's interesting because Google has refused to release this data in the past. So, I commend Google for taking this step. They even put Laszlo Bock, their senior VP of people operations, on the PBS NewsHour last night, and he acknowledged that they've got a long way to go to diversify the workplace, and that it is a geeky, male-dominated environment that is not that welcoming to women. Now, that said, let me invite you to go to Google and enter the phrase gender ethnic breakdown of Google employees. And what you will find is that on the first page of results, there is only one that is more than a day old. And that is a post here from February 2010, which was a blog called Restructure. And it said, Google's race and gender makeup is a trade secret. So, just that cursory look at Google on Google shows you that the company that is our portal to get information, the company that gathers incredible amounts of personal data on our internet usage, and then feeds it back to us in the form of advertisements, yes, that company has finally decided that this is information the public should be able to see. I think that speaks volumes about the lack of transparency at Google. For Google, the transparency is one way. We show it all, and they collect it all. And they use it, and in some cases manipulate us, based on the information they collect. A few more factoids here. Google's gender split in the top ranks, only 21% of leadership positions held by women, only 17% of technology-specific jobs held by women. And to be fair, this pattern is reflected across the tech industry. So, I give a qualified congratulations to Google. Just wonder what took so long, guys. And guys is the right way to put it. Well, they're working on some truthiness in Great Britain. There's what is called the Chilcot Inquiry into the Iraq War. And it's more than we've attempted to do in this country. Yeah, we do have the 6,000-page report on CIA rendition, torture, and detention, but that's still secret, and it will not really reveal the White House and national security deliberations that occurred before we went into Iraq. So I credit the Brits for attempting some truthiness here and trying to get at the facts. So at issue right now is whether Tony Blair will release the records of his many conversations with George W. Bush related to the invasion of Iraq and the occupation and the war that continued much longer than any of them ever expected. Well, now the Chilton Inquiry has accepted a minimal approach to the information that they've requested. The agreement is that they will be given the gists and quotes from 25 notes and 130 records of conversations between Blair and Bush. However, only Blair's side of the conversation will be revealed. They're going to protect the dumbass from Texas. And this, of course, is not the complete body of this information. And the critical meeting that I want to see the minutes of or hear a recording of is on or about January 30th of 2003. I believe Blair was in Washington meeting with Bush. And they were talking about how they really hadn't been able to build a really solid case to invade Iraq, that this weapons of mass destruction ruse was not working out very well. It just wasn't convincing enough. It wasn't closing the sale. And we are told that in that conversation, George W. Bush said, well, why don't we paint a plane with UN markings and shoot it down over Iraq and then blame Saddam? Now, we have no indication that that false flag event ever occurred. But just the idea that Bush was floating those kinds of schemes with his lapdog pal Tony Blair just, what, 5-6 weeks before the shock and awe invasion? I think it's quite telling, and it's one of the documents that I hope to see sometime in my lifetime. In Albany, New York, on June the 7th, I want to invite any listeners who are in that general area to drop in at a concert that is being put on by friends of mine at Rustic Justice Records, and it includes appearances by Shahid Buttar, the executive director of the Bill of Rights Defense Committee. I think Dan Johnson from Panda is going to be there. I know Jill Stein, the 2008 Green Party candidate for president, will be there. And the focus is on music and on liberty. And Panda, as you may know, is People Against the NDAA. That, of course, is the National Defense Authorization Act, which remains in effect despite the best efforts of Chris Hedges and his attorney, Carl Mayer, to overturn that portion of the defense budget bill that allows for the unlimited detention at a military base without charge or trial of an American who is accused of terrorism. And it's a draconian piece of legislation. It does not belong on the books of United States laws. And it is a deep embarrassment that the Obama administration has played games with this, saying, oh, the president didn't want that law, and when it was signed into law, he then became its biggest defender and ordered the Justice Department to take every step to keep it in effect. So I think this is a great idea, and I hope you will be able to drop by Albany, New York. I'm going to put up a link to the information about this concert on June 7th. And here's one of the bands that's going to be playing. They're called the Ameros. Take a listen.
We are living in this new American century. Stuck in an old American penitentiary. Whoa, what, son? It's elementary. It's just a matter of time to emancipate yourself. Well, you only need to free your mind.
June 7th in Albany, New York at the Washington Avenue Armory. And I'm glad to see Rustic Justice get behind this very important effort. Meanwhile, in the capital of California, I have some really disappointing news. But first, a touch of good news. I got an email just before I sat down behind the mic today that Senator Mark Leno's bill passed in the state Senate, which would increase the minimum wage all the way to $13 by 2017. And that is one of the few bright spots on the legislative agenda. And just in the past week in the California State Senate, they buried a bill that would have placed a reasonable tax on oil extraction in the state of California. We extract 40% of the oil that is converted to gasoline for sale in California from oil wells in California. And yet, unlike Texas and other states, we don't have an oil extraction tax. And behind all of these bills that are being killed is, of course, the likelihood that campaign contributions from corporate interests outweighed the public interest on these bills. The other just came through today. Yesterday, the state Senate failed to muster the votes needed to set a moratorium on fracking into place. The bill carried by Senator Holly Mitchell of Los Angeles would put a pause or a hold on any fracking in the state until there is a full determination that it doesn't pose a risk to public health. There are many other issues like the wastewater, the toxic wastewater, the waste of water that fracking requires, and, of course, the 96% reduction in the projection of the amount of available reserves of oil and gas in the Monterey Shale in the center part of California. And so the vote was 18 to 16, three votes short of the majority needed for approval. Now, that three-vote shortage, that is the same number of disgraced Democrats who are members of the state Senate who have been suspended with pay while they face various legal entanglements. And one of those guys, Senator Rod Wright, was convicted of eight felonies back in January, and they have not expelled him. They suspended him, and they ultimately have moved to take away paychecks from these three guys. But they are the three votes that the Democrats need to pass this progressive legislation, and this is a fault of the Senate leadership, in my opinion. Because Rod Wright should have been bounced in January, his replacement, likely a Democrat, would have been elected by now. And if they'd done the same with the other two guys, Leland Yee from San Francisco, and, gosh, I'm blocking on the third guy, if they had removed these people, then the majority that the Democrats hold would have been restored. And so it's not only the fracking moratorium. The same state Senate defeated a bill to require labeling on GMO foods. And, of course, we nearly passed a ballot measure, Prop 37, to attempt that back in 2012. It was trending to pass until the industries came in with misleading commercials. They spent $46 million or so to defeat Prop 37. And lawmakers rejected the bill again. And it's really tragic because, you know, labeling food with that information is not hard for the industry. They simply don't want to do it. And it's amazing to see them to be able to buy their way out of any restrictive legislation in the state Senate. And the other bill that lost on a three-vote margin was a matter by Senator Jerry Hill from San Mateo that would have banned public and private agencies from selling data collected from automatic license plate reader systems. So I don't know if you know this, but outside my office here, I could put a license plate reader, and I could grab all the license plates of people who drive by. And I can take that data and cross-reference it with publicly available data, and then I know who's been driving on this street. You can imagine ways that that information can be used, either to try to sell people stuff or to manipulate them or leverage them in some way. And I don't understand why the state Senate would defeat a bill that attempts to enhance the privacy of ordinary Californians. I just don't. And we are in the midst of mail voting for the primary election in California, which officially is next Tuesday, June 3rd. And it is a real yawner of an election. I'm sorry to say that. There are no ballot measures of importance to draw out voters. Jerry Brown is cruising to renomination. He's unopposed on the Democratic side and has two people who can't even get to 20% in the polls who are challenging him from the Republican Party. And one of those is a guy named Tim Donnelly, who's a current member of the state assembly, best known for getting busted trying to hop on an airplane with a loaded weapon at the Ontario Airport in Southern California. He's the Tea Party guy. He has raised very small amounts of money, has no advertising, is just using shoe leather to run this campaign. And he is very extreme. He said, as governor, I will veto all new restrictions on your business, your freedom, and your constitutional civil rights. Never submit a budget that spends more than we take in. Treat jobs like we treat endangered species. Protect them by any means necessary. Fight to lower tax rates for all hardworking Californians. End early prisoner release and protect the public from violent predators. Well, he is a very extreme candidate. And to the surprise of the Country Club Republican establishment, he's been polling well ahead of their choice, a guy named Neil Kashkari. You may recall he was selected by Hank Paulson, Bush's final Treasury Secretary, to run the Troubled Asset Relief Program, the TARP program, the bailouts. And he cannot break 5 or 7% in the polling for Republican voters in this primary. And so he doesn't seem to have much of a future. But the, as I say, the establishment Republicans are hoping that he will pull an upset victory over Donnelly and be the standard bearer who loses to Jerry Brown this November. There's one other person running for state office that I wanted to draw your attention to, and that is Orly Tates. And you say, Orly Tates, that's a weird name, but I've heard it before. Orly Tates. Who the hell is Orly Tates? Orly Tates has been the leading proponent of the theories about Barack Obama's birth certificate, that he was actually born in Kenya. She is running for Attorney General of California. Now, she is a lawyer, and she's also some sort of a licensed doctor. And as I read her ballot statement, some of this is kind of appealing. As Attorney General, Orly Tates promises to nullify unconstitutional NSA spying on law-abiding citizens of California. Nullification of use of the NSA of Google, Facebook, Yahoo, and others is a tool of unconstitutional data gathering. Let's see what else. Blah, 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 blah. So one of the things is she doesn't explain how she will nullify these matters and acts as if nullification is just a special power that's available when you're elected attorney general. And then she goes really off the rails here. She wants nullification of unfunded federal mandates. There's that nullification word. Nullification of the NDAA provisions, which allow indefinite incarceration without trial. Now, that's appealing. But what is your power of nullification, Orly Tates? I don't get it. And I predict that we're going to see Orly Tates get less than 5% of the votes statewide when the votes are counted after our primary Tuesday. Thanks for joining me today for my news and comment. This is the free podcast that you're authorized to share with absolutely everyone. Thanks for listening. I'm Peter B.
Happy trails to you until we meet again. keep smiling and